And it was like this beautiful, well-delivered oratory on modern politics and World War II. And I just was like, that's really fucking good. And then I saw Bigfoot and I was like, what is this movie? Mm-hmm. I texted you and you did not answer, but I just said, this movie is ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was probably at work.
Yeah, you were at work. It was no big deal.
The network children ask for it by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex, the culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
You're listening to the world's greatest multi-generational pop culture podcast, Gen Zex, with Braxton.
Hey.
And me. Yay. So we were just saying, I'm trying to figure out, I got a gift certificate to the local Cineplex.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me wants to go see Spider-Man again, quite badly. I saw it. I enjoyed it. I'd like to enjoy it again. And then there's two other movies. One of them I'm going to look up while we're talking. One's called The Dog Stars. It's Ridley Scott's new one.
Okay. I see a... Have I seen a trailer for this? I might have. Ridley Scott...
It looks good.
Post-apocalyptic landscape, find the origin of a mysterious radio transmission. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's people I don't know. And then Anne Hathaway has a new movie with Ewan McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
A cosmic event relocates an entire suburban street to the age of dinosaurs.
Oh, End of Oak Street. I'm very excited for that one.
Yeah, that is tomorrow.
Oh, okay. That's very cool. Yeah. I have been keeping an eye on that one. That one looks very fun.
Now, normally, my selling point on this would be Ewan McGregor's in it. But guess what my wrong wife, who is wrong, very wrongly wrong, she does not find Ewan McGregor attractive.
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect. I would cross the street for Ewan McGregor. That's all there is to it.
That's very fair. You know what?
He's up there on the Hemsworth scale for me in terms of handsome. And his ability to grow facial hair that is sculptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you've ever watched any of his motorcycle documentaries.
No, I haven't.
Oh, if you've got Apple, you absolutely should spend some time. They did one where they went from London to London, going east, all the way across Russia, across the Bering Strait, down through Alaska, Canada, and America to New York, and then back to London. It was wonderful. They did another one when they went from John O'Groats in the northernmost city in Scotland, and went all the way to the South Africa.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They did another one where they came up the, excuse me, from, what is it, Tierra del Fuego, down to the bottom of South Africa or America, and went all the way up until they got to Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
And they did that one on electric bikes.
I've always wanted to ride an electric bike. They look fun.
They're all right. They don't. So I'm not in love with gas bikes because they're gas bikes. I'm in love with gas bikes because they make them in my size.
Oh, you know? Yes. Very fair.
And the electric bikes are all kind of small. I have yet to get on one and just be like, this fits, you know, though. I mean, they rode the two bikes they did were two prototype Harley Davidson electric bikes.
Okay.
Those might be big enough. I've never seen one in real life.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a Harley, I mean, the Harleys are pretty big. The whole reason my mom can't ride her motorcycle is because it's too big. She can't hold it up because of her knee surgeries.
Huh.
But that means that I get it when I'm good enough.
Are you thinking about it? You take some classes, maybe?
Very heavily thinking about it. I have a friend who bought a project bike and got it working. And so he wants to do the motorcycle course because it'll be less gas when he has to take the bike to college.
Yeah.
Instead of his VW Golf that's like souped up to be a little race car.
Ah.
So he's going to take the classes. I have another friend who already rides and has been riding for years, and he's going to give us like a crash course. Then we're all going to do the classes together. And then the end goal is a motorcycle trip to Evanston where we can go bet on horse races.
Dude, that is properly white trash. I love it. I love it a lot. No, Kyla, my middle child, just took a motorcycle course. And I got really excited and started sending her, you know, here's this safety thing for your helmet. Here's the safety thing for your back. You know, here's you know, the proper body armor to wear. Leather looks great, but this is better, and yeah, all of this kind of goofy shit. And then she finally wrote back and went, the school didn't hold the second class. And now when she calls the school, the motorcycle school, no one answers the phone. So she's only halfway through her motorcycle course, and the school just fucking disappeared.
Did she pay for them like all up front?
Yep.
Oh, okay. So she got scammed.
Yep. They had bikes and stuff. She rode their bikes to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but my guess is the school just probably folded.
Yeah.
And they just decided to keep whatever pennies they had in the petty cash jar and move on. But no, school's great. I learned how to ride a motorcycle on a neighbor's dirt bike.
Mm-hmm.
And had a terrible crash. Learned many valuable lessons. And have only laid my bike down one other time. And I was coming from, you know, when you're coming up 215 there on the west side by the Valley Fair Mall. And, yeah, and it gets you onto the 201.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a car crowd me over and push me off the road.
Oh.
And I went down and laid the bike and kind of scrambled on top of it and rode the bike until it stopped moving.
Mm-hmm.
At which point I pitched forward and did a couple of rolls myself, which was really annoying.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, the lady who ran me off the road had no idea she'd done it, didn't stop, anything like that. Some guy behind me pulled over, made sure I was alive, helped me get the bike back up, and some things bent back in the right direction. And then I got her started and rode her home. She was an old Yamaha Special 750,
mm-hmm,
the three carburetor version they put out in the early 80s. Loved that bike. It was solid. Would not start on a cold day. Just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I think the bike that my mom said that I could ride if I get good enough has only been set down like one time.
Mm.
And it was just because my grandpa was sitting at a red light and got rear-ended.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, just enough. He didn't get hurt. It was just enough that he lost his balance, but he was able to kind of jump off the bike as it fell.
Yeah, I like those. I haven't been knocked down yet, but I have been bumped into a couple of times.
Mm.
And the front tire comes up and you do a little thing and it's really, yes, scary. And then the front tire comes down and you put the kickstand down and you go over and you punch somebody's mirror off. That's happened twice.
I don't know if I'd do that, but
I don't know, man. When you're that full of fucking fear adrenaline.
That's fair.
You know, and it's just like, how do you not fucking see me? You know,
yeah, I'm right in front of you.
I'm 6'2". I weigh 270 pounds. You know, I can't ride small bikes. I'm on a big bike.
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck do you not see me? What are you doing? what you're doing is something that's going to get somebody like me killed, and that usually annoys me, and so I punch their mirrors off.
Okay, but that's valid.
It's a much younger me. I haven't ridden in years. I sold my last bike, more than 10 years ago, to pay for a course that my ex-wife wanted to go to, and just have not been... The last time I was in position to buy a new bike was 2016, and I, for the life of me, can't figure out what happened and why the bike didn't get purchased. It should have been. But, you know, and that was that one, that last one I almost got was a 1997 Honda Valkyrie. It's the one they put together. It's like a straight six turned. So it's basically a car engine, a six-cylinder car engine that you're on top of.
Pretty.
Yeah. That was a good, that's a fun bike. I like riding that one. Anyway, hi, buddy.
Hi.
Yeah, end of Oak Street. I've heard so little about it, and then I caught a commercial, and I was like, oh, look, Anne Hathaway's in peril again. I wonder who's chasing her. Oh, my God, that's a dinosaur! And instantly, I'm like, I want to see this.
Yeah, I saw the first trailer when it released. I'm very excited we're getting more dinosaur movies that aren't Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Jurassic franchise no matter how stupid they get.
Same. Same.
But I also really did like Primitive War, if you ever saw that.
I'm looking it up right now. Tell me about
it. That was the one. It came out a couple years ago. It's dinosaurs in Vietnam. It's based on a book. The book is really good, too.
Okay.
But yeah, it's this group of Green Berets goes missing in a portion of the jungles in Vietnam. And so this group that's actually supposed to be leaving Vietnam is sent in to find them. And they figure out that this valley is just completely overrun with dinosaurs.
Oh, my God. Trisha Helfer's in it. I love Trisha Helfer. Jeremy Piven's in it. Oh, that's great. I got to see this.
It was really fun. It's on Hulu right now, I believe.
I am running to the remote to look it up as we speak, because I have some homework that I did last week that I really wanted to have a word with you about.
Okay.
The man who shot Hitler and then the Bigfoot. It was so close to being a good movie, you know, but like the whole thing with Sam Elliott being a you know, a sad, brokenhearted, very, very aged veteran. I thought he played that flawlessly.
Oh, yeah.
It was powerful. It was moving, even though the script was pretty bland up to that point. I was just like, you know what? He's really fucking carrying this off. Okay. Maybe this Bigfoot shit isn't going to be as goofy as nope. That is very goofy Bigfoot shit. Because, I mean, how can you be? You're an 80-year-old man, and all of a sudden the government's like, you're the only one immune to this weird Bigfoot virus.
You're immune to the Bigfoot pathogen. So now you have to go kill him.
The whole speech about having killed Hitler and it not meaning anything, because what he was and who he was and the message that he carried was too alive to just end with killing the man. And it was like this beautiful, well-delivered oratory on modern politics and World War II. And I just was like, that's really fucking good. And then I saw Bigfoot and I was like, what is this movie? I texted you and you did not answer, but I just said, this movie is ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was probably at work.
Yeah, you were at work. It was no big deal. But I, at the end of it, I, Tiffany, who was paying no attention to it whatsoever, was like, how was it? And I was like, it was like 2/3 of a really good movie. And then 1/3 of, I don't understand what the fuck I just watched or who spent money on this. But Sam Elliott fucking sparkled.
It is really funny to see just amazing character performances from big actors in these little tiny movies that nobody cares about.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it. Primitive War, right there. Here we go. It is on Disney.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Yeah, I'm definitely watching that today.
Yeah, they're doing a second one, too, because I think there's like three books.
Okay. That's good. I should look the book up, too.
Yeah, the book is really fun. It's, I would say, have you read the Jurassic Park book?
Yes.
Okay, so you know how, like, that's more kind of horror
yes.
driven? This is more of that. So it's, it does this thing where most of the dinosaurs are just bloodthirsty killing machines. And they don't kind of act like animals, which in the setting is very cool because they're in Vietnam. But where Jurassic Park had them act a little bit like animals, this kind of throws that out the window.
Is this Primitive War Dispatches the Hunting of Stalker Force?
Let me see.
Or is it Dino War Vietnam?
I think the first book was just called Primitive War.
Okay.
Operation Undertow was the first one.
Okay.
Or Opiate Undertow, my bad. Not Operation.
Opiate Undertow?
Yeah.
Nothing like a weird fucking subtitle to just make you nervous about a book.
Yeah, released in 2017. It was self-published.
Huh. I think it's this one. It says it's Dino War Vietnam, originally Primitive War, by Ethan Pettis.
That is the author.
Okay. It's in German. Okay. I'm going to look for this later when it's not quite so boring on an audio format.
That's fair. It's also a comic book, too.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, I remember the comic book.
Yeah, the comic book is hard to find now.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that one. That was a flash. That one came and went really quick. That is. Oh, fun. Okay. Yeah, I will finish looking that up later. So, let's do this. Let's take a trip to the week of December 20th, 1979. Major headlines centered on the ongoing Iran hostage crisis as the ousted Shah left the United States for Panama. OPEC, which is a funny note that when I was a kid, I wanted to be a helicopter pilot for OPEC.
Oh, cool.
They paid a lot of money and you got to fly all day long. And it was a great way to bank up your commercial hours so that you could then come back to the States and rate very high paying jobs. Because OPEC paid their helicopter pilots really, really well. And I knew that as a kid. Anyway, OPEC failing to agree on unified oil prices, leading to the independent hikes. Rupert Holmes' escape. Climbing the music charts. You might know that song by its oft wrong title, Do You Like Pina Coladas?
Oh, the Pina Colada song.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's called Escape.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the hostage crisis reached day 46. The exiled Shah of Iran departed the United States for Panama amid intense international diplomacy. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, failed to agree on a benchmark pricing, leaving individual member nations free to independently raise petroleum costs and stoking U.S. inflation fears. The Philadelphia Flyers tied the Pittsburgh Penguins 1-1 to extend their undefeated streak to 28 games, matching a current NHL record. And then on December 20th, 1979, a weird thing happened. In December, of 1979, two movies dropped that were supposed to be sort of an answer or a coattail hangers on of Star Wars from just a couple of years previously. One of them was Star Trek The Motion Picture, a movie I adore for all apologetic reasons, because frankly, with the exception of the pornographic ship flybys, it's not a very good movie.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But the the fan service they gave the old Enterprise, you know, still to this day, I watch that on the biggest screen I can with the volume up as loud as I can because it's beautiful shots. The other was from Disney called The Black Hole. The Black Hole, to a 7 year old, to a 7 or 8 year old, roundabout, I think I was 8, was a terrifying movie.
Terrifying. I can see that.
Now I'm just like, wow, what a flawed film. But then it was, I hadn't seen 2001 yet. And the truth is, at that young age, because it was pretty soon that I saw 2001, 2001 would be a scarier movie to me now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right before I flipped on the Internet Explorer and asked ChatGPT how to make me feel better after seeing something about the scary AI. But, you know, it starts out simple. Explorers in a spaceship flying through space on their way to hopefully colonize a planet with like four dudes, a robot, and a lady. Poor lady. You know, see a ship and they're like, hey, isn't that the missing ship? And they're like, yeah, that is a missing ship.
The Cygnus.
Yep, the Cygnus. And so it's parked right outside the event horizon of a black hole, where we know that gravity would pull it in and crush it now. And at the time, they didn't know horse shit. So they just assumed that with enough power, you could park on the edge of the event horizon and not get sucked into the black hole. And there the ship sat. And that was the thing that they had figured out, a way using math.
I think he said he had like a gravitational engine. It was creating like a gravitational field.
Yeah.
Which I get. I don't know. I feel like I'm not a scientist, but I feel like even if you have a gravitational field in space, if something is pulling that gravitational field will still move with the ship.
Just because you've got a bubble doesn't mean the bubble's not going to float.
Yeah.
You know? So Ernest Borgnine is in this movie, for fuck's sake. Robert Forster, you know, fetish of Quentin Tarantino, is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Perkins from Psycho is in this movie. You know? And then Maximilian Schell, you know, who you do not know.
No. You're not.
Okay. He plays Dr. Hans Reinhardt. So, the gang...
Oh, he was a Deep Impact. Maybe I do know him.
You might. So, the gang does a flyby, gets caught in the black hole's gravity well. They have to fight back. It fucks up their ship, and they're like, well, let's park on the derelict where there's no life signs coming from and steal some parts and get the fuck out of here. At which point, all the lights on the ship come on, and they're like, what the fuck? Now... Kate McRae, this is where it started. This is where you're at the beginning. You're like, oh, boring 70s sci-fi. And then it's like, oh, no, ridiculous and boring 70s sci-fi. Dr. Kate McRae can talk via ESP with the robot Vincent, voiced by Roddy fucking McDowell. You know?
And uncredited.
Yeah. Which is nuts. Probably he saw the movie. So
I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, so they get on board the ship, the big ship, and you know, they go to take a look around, and they get on the little thing, because it's a big-ass ship. I mean, I'll give it that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they get on the little sledge, the little train. They go, and they meet Dr. Hans Reinhardt. And Dr. Hans Reinhardt is surrounded by robots, as Bernie Sanders would say, robots. And he's like, nope. Put everybody in the escape pods and sent them away and stayed myself and built the robots to keep me company and do the work. It's an impressive as hell set.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I really took away from this movie was just how much set they got with the budget.
It's how much budget they spent on that and not a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm. Because all of the sets looked amazing.
Yeah, they really were. There is a part a little later I want to talk about that made me laugh this time, and I've never laughed at it before. But then they meet Maximilian, the deadly robot. Can you imagine how fucking scary that robot was when you're 8 years old?
Oh yeah, just giant robot with whirring blades that doesn't speak.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when there's a cute little friendly Vincent in front of us.
I did like Vincent.
Mm-hmm. I like Bob.
I did like Bob. Now, Bob, they meet a little later. And he's sort of an earlier model of Vincent. And he's voiced by fucking Slim Pickens.
Mm-hmm.
Because all robots should have different voices. And one of them should be, oh boy, howdy, it's good to see you, goo goo. Can you believe you're out here in deep space with us? And because, you know, every programmer wants to stick that voice in a fucking robot they're going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So
everybody wants to hear robot diagnostics in a southern accent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not just a southern accent, Slim Pickens' fucking voice, which was just a thing of its own. You know,
mm-hmm.
So we're moving along and things are happening. People are getting suspicious, and Anthony Perkins is starting to act a little twitchy and weird. And it's like, oh, he's perfect for this. And they're like, you know what we should do? We should steal this big ass ship and go back to Earth. And everybody's like, no, let's not. Let's just get on our little ship and get the fuck out of here and let Crazy Doctor Guy do what he wants to do. What Crazy Doctor Guy wants to do is drive the big ship with his little gravitational bubble into the black hole to get to the other side.
Yeah, that is very telling for the time that this absolutely brilliant scientist wants to hurl himself into a black hole.
Yeah.
Just to see what happens.
Yep. Then we get the escape. This is one of my favorite little plot points. Dr. Reinhardt has done all of his advanced math on paper.
Mm-hmm.
He's in this beautiful spaceship full of fucking computers and stuff. And he's like, here, take my folder.
Take my formulas.
You know, gives them back to us. They will forward humanity. It'll be very great. Okay, so Anthony Perkins takes the thing, and then minutes later is murdered by Maximilian, who destroys all the math.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh no, the math. I'll bitch about that in a minute. So we're now trying to escape the ship. Reinhardt points the ship towards the black hole and starts heading in. Out of nowhere, there's an asteroid shower. Oh no, the asteroids are getting pulled in too. Okay, then how come that big glowy orange one was rolling the wrong direction?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's all I'm asking. Because they did a thing where they obviously had built a gigantic model of this and rolled a glowing orange orb straight down this corridor and did a little Indiana Jones would steal this bit later. You know, they got to get across the bridge before the giant glowing asteroid of doom which is insanely spherical for an asteroid, comes
it
rolling
down. Very well.
It rolled very well. But it was a neat fucking effect back in the late 70s. Better than...
I mean, it was cool now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Those practical effects, they just hold up. Like, they just still look good.
They do. And in this, there was some green screening. You know, like, for some reason, the robot recreation room where all the robots go in and have shooting contests for no fucking reason.
I was wondering about that. I was like, is this a training room for the robots that don't need to be trained?
Yeah. And while they're standing outside the door, the room behind them was green screened, showing a film of the room that had apparently been shot at some other time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's just interesting.
One of those little things that just popped out of me. I was like, that's weird. So they try to get to the ship. Ernest Borgnine pulls a fast one, steals the ship, gets shot out of space. So they're like, let's go to the probe. And so they're running all the way to the other end of the ship where the probe is supposedly able to combat the gravitational pull of the black hole and get them the fuck out of there. And they all pile in. And you know, Bob is dead. Slim Pickens' robot's dead. You know, so Vincent's there. Now it's three dudes and a lady off to colonize a planet. Poor lady. You know, and I really can't. It's the, hey, go do me a favor, talk to the doctor with your ESP. And it's like, that's not what ESP is. It doesn't work. You can't talk to a machine with ESP. Everybody knows that. And so they get into the probe. They're trying to escape. Meanwhile, a giant flat screen falls on top of Dr. Reinhardt and squishes him, and he's just all, help, help, and he's yelling at the robots.
Well, Maximilian!
Yeah. The thing about the robots is they weren't robots.
Mm-hmm.
They were mechanized. They were the mechanized after effect of fucking up the crew and turning them into almost robots.
Yeah, it was just everybody was essentially lobotomized.
Yeah. It was a very Star Trek-y effect. Star Trek, the original series effect, when Anthony Perkins pulls the face mask off that one robot.
It was really cool. I was watching this movie, and I enjoy sci-fi quite a bit, and so I was enjoying this. And then they pull that mask off, and I was excited to see a little bit of, like, horror elements just kind of sprinkled in there.
Here's the thing about why I love this movie. Half of the soundtrack.
The soundtrack is brilliant.
That opening score. You know, is scary fucking music. Even now, old, bitter, scarred, and angry me hears that music, and it gives me a sense of foreboding. You know, this is not going to be a movie with a happy ending as soon as the score starts. The other incongruous thing, with at least the way that they present it now, is they have an overture like they used to have in the 50s, where it would open up and it would play the orchestral summary of what you were about to hear, and then the movie would start. And this did the same thing. I sent you a warning just in case, saying, no, the movie's not fucked up. It's got an overture on a black screen.
And I appreciate that you did that, because I started watching the movie, because I couldn't, for whatever reason, I couldn't get Disney Plus to work on my TV in the living room. I think it's got something to do with my stupid Xfinity streaming box that I was given for free. But I had to, it was either watch it in the bedroom or watch it on my phone, and I knew if I went in the bedroom, I was going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And so I watched it on my phone, and I'm glad you said that, because I thought it was broken for a second.
Yeah. Okay, so they get in the probe. They escape. And then they find out, nope, the probe has been programmed to go into the black hole. There's nothing we can do, like flip a switch or pull a memory bank.
I do think it's funny that they had not thought of this because they were there when the probe came out of the black hole.
Right. And then we see Maximilian coming from the probe.
Yeah.
To attack them. Somebody should have checked a goddamn setting is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of go up. The big ship goes through. Okay. And then they go through. And then we get weird camera tricks for a mm-hmm. good 5 minutes. And this is where the movie cops out for me. You know, it was just an adorable little try at hard sci-fi up until mm-hmm. this point when Hans Reinhardt somehow ends up in the body of Maximilian in hell. Literal hell.
Yeah, I felt that the ending was very abstract for yep. the rest of this movie. It tried to do like indie art house stuff that wouldn't be popular for another like 30 years.
Interstellar.
Yeah.
Where, oh, dad's not across space. He's behind the books on this shelf. Mm-hmm. And then after the heaven and hell part that served no purpose whatsoever other than to be an unspoken allegory that nobody knew what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, too much science sends me to hell, or, you know, unregulated science sends me to hell, or turning all my shipmates into robots. That's what is, how did he?
I think
what?
That one sends you to hell.
Well, I'm pretty sure it does.
I think that's the one.
Yeah. You know, but is that what the movie's saying? I don't know. So, and
actually, the theme of the movie is look how cool Reinhardt looks in this robot suit.
Well, that's the thing is it's like you got Maximilian on top of a mountain and it pulls back and it pulls back and it pulls back. And then there's a pathway with people walking on it wearing robes. Not explained. And then it pulls back and it pulls back and it pulls back. And then we see an angel flying down a hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get all this heaven and hell stuff out of the way. And the ship survives. The probe ship survives. And they're headed off into the universe. This new universe that's not heaven or hell.
Yeah, they're just somewhere now.
No
food, no life support system to speak of.
Yep.
Floating in space.
Floating in brand new space. And then the movie ends. And we're done. And scene. It fell short of what could have been a really good movie in a lot of the same ways that Star Trek the Motion Picture also did. In that the story was pretty fucking silly
mm-hmm.
overall. The acting was fine, you know, but have an ESP with a robot, that's not fine. We can just have comms, folks.
We can just talk to the robot.
Yeah.
Why does she only have ESP for the robot?
Also a very good question, since ESP, from my understanding, only works on organics.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be like a cognitive thing.
Extrasensory perception. Or talk to a robot.
Mm-hmm. Or speak to a robot.
Yeah. One of those. You know, who knows? But yeah, it was a meaningful film for me because it was the second piece of sci-fi that I had really seen.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars being the first one. And it wasn't fucking clowns in space. It wasn't happy go, you know, wee. When mm-hmm. when people are in peril in this movie, especially as an 8-year old, you're like, yeah, they're fucked.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Nothing good can come of this. Look at how they designed the big ship.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just adore the score on this, except for the hero's journey part. You know, the mm-hmm. the fucking trumpets and shit. It's like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Who cares? But those strings. When the front credits start rolling. I mean, it's just a beautiful piece of fucking music.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Anyway, that's all I've got on this one. What were you got any fun takeaways on?
I mean, I enjoyed it. I really liked it. My friends had tried to get me to watch this movie once previously, and I fell asleep, so I'm glad it didn't happen this time.
Me too.
Because I ended up really enjoying it.
It's a nice little time capsule.
It really is. It's just this kind of like look into what sci-fi was before all the Hollywood rules.
Kinda. It's like The Expanse. You ever watch The Expanse?
No, I think we've talked about this.
Yeah, it's hard sci-fi and it's got rules. It's got physics.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to zip off to another planet, you're going to be months in transit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Expanse, not only because I enjoyed the books, but because it is almost completely in defiance of regular Hollywood space rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I like it. Anyway, well, let's take a break. And yeah. When we get back on the other side, you're going to knock my socks off with one of my favorite indie comic book films. I can put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at theleftshow.com.
All right, so I believe for mine, we're going back to April of 2004. So, not super long ago, 22 years ago.
Okay.
CBS News 60 Minutes 2 first broadcast of the shocking photographs depicting the abuse and torture of Iraqi prisoners and U.S. military aired on April 28th, 2004. I believe it was known as the Abu Ghraib Special.
Yeah.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice publicly testified before the 9/11 Commission on April 8th, stating there was no silver bullet that prevented the 2001 attacks.
There was. There were several.
Yeah. Yeah. We could have like not had like an empire of messing with everyone smaller than us for years.
Yep. Yep.
You know, overgrown Goliath holding auditions for the part of David.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Google introduced Gmail to the public on April 1st, 2004, initially greeted with skepticism because of the April Fool's launch date, which was a very interesting day to put that out.
I got married the first time on April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah.
And most of my family thought it was a fucking joke. It's a charged day.
It is a very charged day. There's a lot of implication that goes on. Leading the charts in April of 2004, topping the charts for all of April was Yeah by Usher and Lil Jon and Ludacris, which, I mean, the classic club song.
Oh, yeah. I remember it well.
Topping the domestic box office, we had Kill Bill 2, Passion of the Christ, Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed, which we will talk about the live-action Scooby-Doos at some point.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I have no doubt.
And topping the charts for April of 2004, releasing on April 2nd, was Hellboy. One of the best comic book movies ever made. It is just so absolutely faithful to the original run, The Seeds of Destruction, to a point where you could tell that Del Toro was a massive fan this before doing this. And then he went on to do The Golden Army, which was also amazing.
It really was. I enjoyed that one as well, even though it gets some shit.
Yeah, it gets some shit. I like the big Angel of Death costume. I think one of the things I love about these movies is most of the effects are practical. Like all the suits are practical. Anything you see like in the museum where Hellboy's fighting Samael, that suit is practical.
Mm-hmm.
The only parts that are CGI are when they have to make the Hellboy's hand move a little weird. Like there's one scene where he's holding something and the glove is CGI because I don't think it could actually bend that way.
Okay.
Or like when Hellboy falls out of a window because I don't think they actually wanted to throw Ron Perlman out of a window for this.
He can be a handful.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it follows follows Hellboy. He was brought to this world in World War II by Gregory Rasputin and his two disciples, Hapstein and Cronin. They both have very German names that I will not attempt to. Isa von Hapstein is easy, but Cronin's name I will not attempt.
That's fair.
But they're trying to build an interdimensional portal to free a interdimensional or demonic entity called Ogre Jihad to help them win the war, and then the Americans show up and ruin it, and they shut the portal too soon, and Hellboy is the only thing that came through. And so Hellboy gets adopted by Professor Trevor Broom, and he's raised as his son, and you get this whole very touching found family element to it where, you know, they say several times like us freaks got to stick together. Which, for a child growing up with not a ton of friends and not very outgoing and kind of quiet, this movie very much spoke to me.
Aww.
In a, like, you know, it's not all bad. It does get better. You just kind of have to find the right people.
That's fair.
And I think that this movie is a main reason as to why I've held on to that for, like, my entire life.
It gets better.
It does, yeah. It always does. But one of the... I guess we'll keep going with the movie a little bit because there's some other stuff I want to touch on a little bit later.
Okay.
But 60 years later, Hopstein and Cronin are resurrected by Rasputin, or they resurrect Rasputin. And then you get John Myers, who comes into the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. And then you get to meet Abe Sapien, the blue guy.
Yeah. Doug Jones.
Oh yeah. Yeah, very the casting in this movie was amazing. I mean, Ron Perlman will always be my Hellboy. I saw the David Harbour one. I thought it was good.
Yeah, so did I.
I still haven't seen that other one that released in 2024 because I heard it was bad. But there was another one where they did the it was the Crooked Man story, which is one of the best Hellboy stories aside from the Wild Hunt, which is what they did for the David Harbour one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you had Ron Perlman as Hellboy, Doug Jones as Abe Sapien, Selma Blair as Liz Sherman, John Hurt as Trevor Broom, Jeffrey Tambor was in it as Tom Manning, the nose nonsense higher up at the bureau.
Yeah.
But let's see. I mean, it's a classic like comic book story. I mean, Hellboy is brought to this earth to fulfill some massive destiny where he's supposed to bring about the end of the world and assume his title of Among Nurama. And he gets those big, cool horns and the crown of fire. And I don't think they gave him Excalibur in this because I didn't think they wanted to explain it.
Yeah.
But he does have Excalibur when he's Among Nurama in the comics. But he goes and confronts Samael and he finds the nest, and then they figure out that every time they kill one of these demons, two are going to come back. And so they have to go into the nest and they got to blow them all up at once.
Good plan.
Yeah. And solid all throughout logic. This, all throughout this, you're getting this other subplot of Liz Sherman wanting to not be a part of the Bureau because she can't control her pyrokinesis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just keeps accidentally killing people, and at the end, you
so
get to see,
let me out of the safety area to yeah. live as a mortal when I have no control over my fire powers.
Well, because Rasputin came to her in that hospital and like basically made her burn it down, and that was the catalyst to get her back to the Bureau so she could be in the right place to steal her soul and.
Sure, sure.
Trying to convince Hellboy to open the gate.
Yes.
But yeah, I totally understand. Why is she in a cab riding around New York when, you know, two nights ago she did immolate an entire hospital?
Yep.
Like, I understand she is a person. She deserves to have her own freedom. She did not choose this. But also, maybe we should give it a week.
Yeah.
Just see if anything's going to pop up sooner.
Yeah. We'll keep her for observation. No yeah. hospital, yeah. pun intended.
72-hour hold, then you can go get your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But they blow up the nest. Hellboy rejects his destiny. He breaks off his horns and he stabs Rasputin. And then he finds Liz and he goes to her ear and he whispers, you know, he say, hey, on the other side, whoever's got her, I'll cross over for her, and then you'll be sorry, and then she comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just this, in a way, it is the cutest little monster movie ever.
I'll give you that. I'll agree with that.
Because it has all just this like sweet found family stuff, and then all the stuff with Hellboy and Liz is really cute. And it's just, it's very fun. This is just another one of those, like, this movie makes me happy.
It's my favorite movie of Selma Blair's.
Okay.
I mean, there's other ones that she's done, and you know, that were fine and whatever. Most of her movies don't, you know, I am certainly not the target demographic
mm-hmm.
of them, but... You know, I liked her acting in this enough that I paid attention to other things that she did.
Okay, that's so, fair.
Yeah, Ron Perlman, perfect, absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
No notes.
No, yeah, I mean he is cemented as Hellboy in my mind like forever.
Yeah,
like when I read the comics now, I am reading it in Ron Perlman's voice.
Of course you are. Yeah, there's rumors going around the internet they're gonna make another Hellboy and that he's up for it.
I hope so. I would really like to see them do, because I mean they've done Seeds of Destruction, They've done the Wild Hunt. Those are the two big Hellboy stories, because the second volume, Strange Places, was just side stories of what he was doing outside the BPRD.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see him do Hellboy in Hell and just end that kind of Hellboy trilogy with that.
That'd be great. And they need to hurry. He's really old now.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's very funny that in the movie, he's actually 60, but he looks 30, so they could get Ron Perlman to play him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't age like us.
Nope. Demons rarely do.
No, and he also loves cats and Baby Ruths.
Yes. It's it is a joyful film.
It really is.
Great visuals, a good script, you know, really, really solid fucking acting from everybody involved. And I can't say Doug Jones's name enough as Abe Sapien. It's so good.
Oh, yes. He's a fantastic Abe.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a delightful picture from tip to tail.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's great. It's another one of those movies. When I'm having a hard time, Hellboy goes on. As I believe I've said before, my dog is blind, and so he likes noise.
Yeah.
When I leave the apartment, and so my PS4 has been conscripted into permanent DVD player for a while.
Yeah. Very sweet.
One of them. Yeah. So he's been watching Hellboy or listening to Hellboy on repeat for a couple days. So
that's fantastic. That'll make him very happy.
Oh yeah. But yeah, and I don't know. I love that Mignola was attached as a writer to this.
Yeah, so do I. I thought that was, I don't know how much he wrote, but you know, other than the source material.
Mm-hmm.
But
I imagine that Del Toro brought him on. I mean, it's clear that Del Toro's a fan.
Yeah, it's clear.
But yeah, I don't know. What was your, you liked this movie. I feel like we've put this on at this shop before, probably a couple times.
Oh, certainly. It's behind the paywall right now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I enjoyed watching Ron Perlman in, you know, castigate me whichever way you will, internet, but the way that he played Hellboy, so fucking tough but vulnerable as shit.
Yes.
You know, it's his take on the character was three-dimensional, which is fantastic because it's so easy to not do that when you're playing a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and I think that's one really good thing that got brought over from the comics, because especially in the later BPRD stuff, Hellboy is very kind with these other monsters, and he's very touching, and he understands because he's one of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a great little, it's more of a comedy couple of issues, but he goes to Point Pleasant and he finds the Mothman, and the Mothman is just a moth that acts kind of like a little kid.
Aww.
And there's this scene where the townspeople are all gathered around him, and they're all yelling at the Mothman and calling him a monster, and Hellboy looks behind him, and I think the Mothman is like playing with like his proboscis in the air. And Hellboy goes, "That guy?" And then he takes him to a bar and orders himself a whiskey neat and a Shirley Temple with extra grenadine for Mothman.
Oh, that's sweet. That is sweet. No, it's an exciting movie. It's fun. It's fast paced. It doesn't slow down. It doesn't fuck around. It starts out solid, gives you a really good backstory without fucking around with it too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then boom, you're off. Wee monsters.
Yeah, and I feel like the only times this movie slows down a little bit, it's to give necessary character development.
Yes.
To Hellboy, or to Abe, or to Broom, or to Liz.
Yes. Yeah, it was great. It was great. I mean, and I can never say enough about John Hurt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, my favorite doctor.
He was amazing as Trevor Broom. He was very... very believable as just this older veteran who's on his way out and getting ready to pass the torch.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It was a good win. Good pick this week, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have a ton to say about it. I mean, what can you really say about Hellboy? It's
good.
It's good. Go watch it. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, and if we spoiled it for you, it's your own fault. It's 30 years old.
Yeah, it's 22 years old.
Yeah.
You've had time.
Anyway, what we're going to do now is take this conversation over to Patreon, patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. And every week that we record, we do special content over there with deeper dives and longer looks and more whistling, wolf's calling, you know.
Yeah.
It's inappropriate, but in a sporting kind of way. Yeah, I've lost the plot. Anyway, join us over at Patreon, patreon.com/defendmedia. That's where all the fun continues week after week as we provide you shows here on the Defenestrate Media Network. Anyway, I will say thank you, Braxton.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet, buddy.
Always and fun to be here.
I'll say thank you for listening, folks. Keep the comments coming. Rate and review. You might end up on a t-shirt.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. I made it. I just need to upload it.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.